Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam. If you would like us to deliver Tim Hortons and treats like Timbits to your office, all you have to do is go on Twitter and use the hashtag TimHortonsTCNT. Tell us why you want Tim Hortons. Tell us where you work. And the more times you tweet, the more chances you have to win. And once a week, we will pick an office. And on Thursdays, we will deliver Tim Hortons to your office.
Yep. If I use the hashtag TimHortonsTCNT, will you deliver to my studio?
No.
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 Dang it.
You're not right. You're not eligible.
Darn.
Sorry.
Yeah, but hop on Twitter, use that hashtag TimHortonsTCNT, and sign up. Tell us why we should choose you, and encourage your office mates to join as well. Because you know they're not busy.
And unless
you work harder than everybody in your office, you know that.
And unless you want to incur the wrath of one Sam, make sure you use that hashtag TimHortonsTCNT.
Yeah, there are a couple people tweeting at me, and they're like, will I get the Tim Hortons? And I'm like, only if you use the hashtag. Hashtag Tim Hortons TCNT.
Sam will not waver. For everyone that doesn't use the hashtag, three of yours will be discounted. We will ignore three other ones. So yeah, go on to Twitter. And if you don't have a Twitter account,
make one or use
Sally over in accounting.
Yeah, just find somebody in your office that does have a Twitter account.
Yeah, they'll leave it logged
somebody's
in at their desk.
Got one. Yeah. Just sit down to somebody else's computer, open up Twitter. They're probably logged in.
Joining us now, friend of the show, Jonathan Honenbrink. Good morning, sir.
Hey, is that what you're saying? You have to use a hashtag when you start anything?
Exactly.
On Twitter. All right, how are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, we're doing very good. Very good. We're really getting things going, man, and just pushing. The SD groups in Minneapolis have been a blessing. I feel humble how much work they've been doing, knocking doors and dropping literature around the city for me.
Well, last time we had you on, you were the only Republican candidate for mayor. And since then, you dropped out of the mayor's race and you're now running for a park board in Minneapolis. Let's start there. What was behind that decision to shift from the mayor's race to the park board race?
Well, after I spent about $35,000 of my own money and realized I couldn't get into a debate. I mean, I could get into some, but I couldn't get into the major debates. They wouldn't allow that as a Republican. And it's something that if I can't get my voice out through debating these other candidates, I really can't push forward. Oops, sorry. And it's one of those things where if you're going to be spending $35,000, you have to really make sure your money's going somewhere where you're actually going to win. So I realized that, and I said to myself, the real reason that I got involved in this is, you know, what happened in 2015 as I was coaching and working with the park board, and the park board's something that's special to me as a child, and because that's what I grew up with. And I just decided to move over and shift to that because I know that running the commissioner at large position, which there's three of them, is a very powerful position in Minneapolis, and there's some really good change that can happen. And, you know, I'm ready to push with that, and I have been pushing with that. And things have been going really, really well. And I'll still be able to hit my platform and the things that I would like to do for the city. And that's kind of the focus, as long as I can help and push some good ideas and get kids off the street and not in the prison system.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you know, a lot of people don't think about the park board as being a terribly important board, but with, you know, with the number of parks alone that you have in Minneapolis and in the Twin Cities, I mean, there's a lot that goes on in the park board. Talk a little bit about how your agenda, what you were specifically inspired you to run for mayor, how you can apply that as a member of the park board.
Well, since the budget's $111 million.
Oh, my God.
And it's very, very, very large budget. Look at Three Rivers. It's like 58, something like that. And they cover a much bigger, broader area. But the one difference is in Minneapolis, the park board's responsible for the community centers. And the community centers haven't been touched and are rebuilt or nothing happens with them. And I was actually talking to one of the commissioners at large. I sat down at her house and I said, why aren't they open? Because they're not open now more than a couple hours a day. And when I was a kid, they were open in the morning till late at night. It was somewhere to go, to do something. You wouldn't get in trouble. You were safe. And it felt good to be there. It was like a family situation and all these park boards that they had, these community centers. And she said to me, you know, we just don't have the money to keep them open. Okay. And since the recession, which the recession was, you know, quite a while ago, she said, we haven't really changed it since then. I said, well, that seems like an excuse. In 2015, I could tell you what happened. I was coaching outside. There was probably about 130 kids outside, different age groups for football. And there was a firefight between the two areas on the football field. Yeah. And we had to run all the kids into the park. First, the park was locked. We couldn't get it open. Then as we get all the kids into the gym, there was a little girl that was on the field, and the, you know, the shooting was still going on. I ran out there, and I grabbed her, and we brought her in. And, you know, they're not safe. There's not a lot of park police that are at the parks at all. They're usually on River Road because it's pretty safe over there. But they don't have a safe haven at these park boards. There's not a presence of the police. We need that presence. First of all, help the kids get to know the police and what they're about. And there's not the safety. And you know, and I know right now, there's not a lot of accountability in the family in Minneapolis,
right,
basically. And these kids have really, really, really nowhere to go. It's really sad.
Well,
and if you go in and you coach these kids and you have to go to their house and pick them up and you see, it's not even about eating properly or eating. You know what? Is their mother, does she have a needle in their arm? Is there cigarette butts on the ground? Things like that. They don't have a fighting chance.
Well, and
the school system's not getting it done. True. You know, nothing's really getting it done. And we put in a lot of money into the school system in Minneapolis and a lot of money in the park board, and we're not getting any results.
It's so important, too, that there is an appropriate voice to prioritize how we go and deal with those parks. I know that, like, for us as a family, I feel so blessed that I'm able to have my 15 and my soon-to-be 11-year-old go off to the park. And just play and know that they're in a safe environment and a safe neighborhood. And there are certainly steps that parents can take if it's not as safe a neighborhood to accompany them. But thankfully, you know, many of us are blessed not having to worry about that. But people don't realize that we do have these parks and they're not protected appropriately. And there needs to be the right mentality and the right prioritization to make that happen. So those parks, at a bare minimum that we have, are safe enough for the children in the neighborhood to go and not have to worry about a bad element entering into the mix. And I think for a lot of people that gets lost because we just get very used to our own situations and not realizing what it's like for other individuals.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And, you know, like I was cleaning one of the parks a couple months ago and, you know, I have to wear gloves, protective gloves. There's needles on the ground, beer bottles, vodka bottles, you know, rum bottles on the ground. And that's what the park boards typically have around them right now. I don't want my child to go there and walk around on the ground and get to step on a needle or anything like that. That's just one aspect of it. But just the actual violence that happens on the park itself, there's full-out brawls that happen. There was just an arrest of one of the kids that I know at the park because there was a full-out brawl. And the cops come way later. They pick out who they can. And I understand that they're not really involved. They're not stationed at each community center. And the kids aren't inside it. They're outside there fighting, you know. And it's just, it's got to be a safe haven. It's got to be a place where there's some after-school educational programs. The way the Minneapolis school system works with the park board is pretty inept. Let's say, like, Minnetonka has things for after-school programs, you know, that parents can get involved with and kids can get involved with. But the park board is really responsible for that in Minneapolis. And they've dropped the ball big time on that.
Yeah.
And they haven't made any kind of effort to push forward. And like I said, this one park member said, hey, we're going to get to that in the next time.
Well, there's a lot, like you said, it's over $100 million budget. There needs to be some accountability. There needs to be people on there that are proving to be good stewards of all that money. And right now it just sort of flies under the radar, and that's a lot of money for a board to not get the type of attention that the park board currently gets. Jonathan Honerbring, where can people find out more about you and your campaign?
Go to jonathanforminneapolis.com. and, you know, click on, say you want to volunteer. We're doing a bunch more knocking days, lit drop days. We're going to have some digital marketing come out next week. We're going to be targeting people in Minneapolis specifically, billboards going up, things like that. Because we want to win a race. The other thing is, you know, I'm going to say this right now, SD63, Joel Burns, has been just organizing, getting things ready, and establishing some awesome things.
Well, you know, if any sort of fiscal conservative movement is ever going to get some momentum in Minneapolis, you got to start somewhere. And I appreciate right. that you didn't just drop out of the scene, that you're continuing that right. fight on the park board. Thanks for joining mm-hmm. us this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Take care, Drew.
Take care. Go to jonathan4minneapolis.com to find out more.
Coming up, GOP Representative Marsha Blackburn has her campaign launch video pulled from Twitter. We'll tell you why. And just after 7:30, House Speaker Kurt Nout will be calling in. We'll get an update on that Line 3 pipeline.
Justice in...
Help change the world and have a little fun along the way. This year's All In for Africa Charity Poker Tournament is on Saturday, October 28th at 10:30 a.m. Proceeds benefit the Against Malaria Foundation. For more details about the event, go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com, keyword events.
If you have any desire whatsoever to listen to me for 20 minutes, not get emotional and gush over the new Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer, you can go to
very calm reaction,
very rational,
analytical.
I have a snippet of his
scholarly
podcast. I have a snippet.
It's pretty close.
That was John.
You can go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page, and there's a podcast available. There'll be another one that gets a little bit more detailed and a little bit less emotion based, but I was moved.
It was a really good trailer.
It's incredible. Don't get me started. It's so good.
I almost got him started before the show this morning, and I'm pretty sure he started to tear up.
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
That's when I backed off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised he didn't burst into tears. Yeah. Just full on heave cries because he's so happy.
For those that don't know, the full trailer for Star Wars: The Last Jedi that comes out in December dropped last night
and
in the middle of halftime.
If you don't know, what are you doing? Go watch it.
It was
wait till 9.
Wait till 9.
Or a commercial break.
It was so great though because my Kyle he'll turn 11 like a week before it comes out. It was so awesome. He started theorizing.
Oh my gosh. He is your son.
I know, and it was so great because his theories were so far off the mark, but I was so like, oh, you're my son. You know, it was so great that he started, I bet that means that thing on Kylo's face is controlling how he thinks. It was
aww.
Awesome. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I need to get him on the podcast.
I'm surprised that you didn't just cut him off and just be like, no, son, the thing in his face, blah, blah, blah. And then just like completely correct him.
My 15-year-old started to do that, to which I said, we will not be discounting any theories in this household.
This is a theory safe zone.
Oh yeah. One of the rules of the Justice household is that all Star Wars theories are valid.
That's right. Except that
they're all legitimate.
Except for my theories. Like, you know, Han Solo lives.
Are we related?
No.
All right then. Out of Politico, Twitter is barring GOP Representative Marsha Blackburn. She's a Senate candidate running against Bob Corker, which might have something to do with whoever decided to pull this ad. It'd be that as it may. They're not letting her advertise her campaign launch video on the service because of a line about her efforts to investigate Planned Parenthood that was deemed inflammatory. So they launched this video last week proclaiming herself a hardcore card-carrying Tennessee conservative. And in an announcement video, she boasts, I fought Planned Parenthood and we stopped the sale of baby body parts, thank God.
Right.
Twitter decided the line violated its ad policies, according to an email obtained by Politico. The video is still on Twitter, but the campaign is barred from paying to promote it.
Right. And you're seeing a lot of commentary about it being censored, and it's not entirely accurate because they haven't yanked the video off of Twitter. They're just saying that the campaign, they won't let them promote it with money, basically.
Right. I am a little surprised that and I don't know what the rules are when it comes to advertising on Twitter, but the fact that Twitter can bar them from advertising on there. You know what I mean?
Well, it's probably, you know, there are regulations and laws in place, and if you're a broadcast outlet as to the nature of political ads and what you can and cannot do and accept, and under very, very, very limited circumstances is a broadcast outlet allowed to reject a political ad.
Right.
So, like, you'll see it in election season, you know, on this station. This is a conservative talk radio station. We carry Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. But every once in a while, you know, when you get into campaign season, like a political action committee or something like that will buy some ads, and you'll hear them on this station that may not align with the viewpoints of the hosts. And inevitably, you know, you'll get complaints from listeners saying, why are you running that ad? Why are you running that ad? Because we have to.
Right.
You know, because we, and even if we didn't have to, you know, I'm not going to be the person that's going to start making decisions based on my editorial judgment or my, you know, my biases as to who can advertise and who can't, because I don't believe in censorship. Twitter can do whatever they want. I don't know for sure, but I don't believe they are operating under remotely the same sort of regulations when it comes to political advertising as broadcast outlets are.
And if there are entities out there that absolutely disagree with my opinions and they want to go and pay to help keep me employed, I am totally fine with that. It doesn't bother me in the least bit. That was always the, because I mean, you know, you do talk radio long enough and that happens, and people kind of go, I don't understand, how are you allowing this to happen? It's like you're not seeing the bigger picture here,
right?
You know, it's
they're helping keep your favorite shows on the air.
Chokes on them. Just saying.
Yeah.
The only issue I have with this, and it's just my own personal feeling, is that's fine. Obviously, Twitter can do whatever Twitter wants to do. I do find it somewhat hypocritical because there's so many things on Twitter that, and I know it's different because they're still allowing the video to be on Twitter. This is simply them buying advertising. But be that as it may, there are lots of things on Twitter that they say are not to be allowed on Twitter that they allow on Twitter. So, but at the same time, Twitter can do what they want to do. And you know, for Marsha Blackburn, she ended up getting way more attention because Twitter did this than she would have if Twitter hadn't gone and done this.
A lot more people are familiar with this ad now than they would have been if Twitter had just let them run it.
Is anybody ever going to figure that out? I said the boycotts and stuff like that. I'd still
drawing so much more attention.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
The
hypocrisy of Twitter is on full display here, though. You know, to say that this ad is inflammatory. Have they read the type of stuff that people put out on Twitter?
Yeah.
You know, have they looked at some of the stuff that people put out on Twitter?
Yeah.
And if they're now all of a sudden they're going to start worrying about an inflammatory line here or there?
No, I think people forget it probably comes down to an individual or a few individuals. And this is where that when we talk about those spheres that people live in, you know, it hits them in a certain spot. Mm-hmm. It affects certain particular individuals that are probably in the decision making room where they go, well, in our view, that violates this thing that we put out there, so let's go ahead and yank it off. Where those other things you mentioned, doesn't hit them in the feels that way.
There's a constant stream of death threats pointing, you know, at the target du jour going on all the time at Twitter. And when you try to report it, you know, when you try to get Twitter to take some action, what do they do? They're just like, well, have you tried muting? Have you considered maybe just muting them, and then you don't have to see it, and then we don't have to do anything?
Have you tried reaching out to them?
Yeah.
Have you tried having a one-on-one discussion or blocking?
Yeah, maybe block them.
Just ignore it. It's real simple. 651-989-5855. Want to remind you, if you want us to deliver Tim Hortons to your office, all you got to do is use the hashtag Tim Hortons TCNT. Tell us where you work and why you want Tim Hortons. And once a week, we will pick an office and deliver that tasty Tim Hortons Timbits and coffee to you. We have House Speaker Kurt Doubt's going to be joining us in just a few minutes.
Yeah, we're also going to talk to Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings, at 8 o'clock. And at 8:35, Pete Hegseth from Fox News is going to join us, and he's going to be joined by Twyla Braze to help promote a Citizens Council for Health Freedom event that's coming up with Pete Hegseth and a friend of the show, Howard Root.
651-989-5855 at any point you want to talk with us. And you can use that hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew along with Sam. Remember, if you miss any portion of the show, we'll remind you now. If you've downloaded the iHeartRadio app, then hopefully you know that you can catch up with the show on the Justice and Drew channel. You can listen to clips from the show. If you haven't downloaded it yet, you can do all those things I just mentioned.
You can do all those things. There's a KTLK Clips channel on the iHeartRadio channel that you can subscribe to, where you'll get clips from, like, not just our show, but Closing Argument with Walter Hudson, Black Republican, Black Democrat, the Minnesota Beercast, Sue Jeffers Show, all of the great shows on TCNT. You can find clips and hours of their show on that KTLK Clips feed, or just subscribe to our individual shows on the channel. It's great. It's free. It's easy. Do it.
A little later in the week. Tomorrow we'll have CNN HLN host Essie Cup will be on the show. On Thursday, I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but Fox News contributor, editor at townhall.com, college campus speaker, Katie Pavlich, will be joining us on the show. And we preview that now because one of the things, if not the thing, we'll be discussing with Katie is that she is scheduled to provide a lecture at the University of Wisconsin. Ahead of that lecture, leftists on campus are planning and I'll make this a little bit more radio friendly, male genitalia arts festival. But unfortunately, I don't really feel comfortable in doing that. But if you, Drew, if you'd like to, go right ahead.
Yeah, they're gonna do a bunch of drawings of penises.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An art fest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To protest a female speaker that they disagree with. Cool.
Yeah, they're doing
classy.
They're doing a play on words with Glocks. And it's blank, not Glocks,
yeah,
at the University of Wisconsin Madison. And because we know Katie personally and how, like, non-controversial a person that she is, it blows my mind that this type of stuff follows her around, and it is such blatant hypocrisy. And Drew, you tweeted about it and hit the nail on the head. If you don't mind my reading your tweet, may I quote you? If a conservative group did this to a female speaker, they would be accused of sexual assault. And he used a hashtag TCNT.
I wasn't even trying to be facetious.
I know.
I mean, that's the type of thing on college campuses. They would call that hate speech. They would call that sexual assault. They would call that the patriarchy. You know, the male dominance patriarchy trying to silence of voices of women. The feminist crowd would go absolutely insane if this tactic were used for a female liberal speaker by a conservative group. Yet the hypocrisy, again, on full display, it's like, oh, it's cute and it's funny. It's kitschy. Ha ha. Look how clever we are.
We will be talking with Katie Pavlich again on Thursday's show as a bit of a preview. Right now, though, out of the Star Tribune, Enbridge pipeline hearings attracted hundreds in St. Paul. Comments at a hearing ran from climate change to the Enbridge project's $2 billion economic boost. So this proposed $2 billion plus pipeline across northern Minnesota, the debate that took place had comments covering everything from climate change, climate damage to construction jobs. This particular hearing in St. Paul, it was one of 18 that's going to be held in Minnesota throughout the 26th of this month, all aimed at gathering input over the Enbridge controversial line.
It's not controversial.
Three replacement project. It's for the people that are worried about global warming and climate change, no. Drew.
They're lying.
They kicked off Tuesday in Thief River Falls, Minnesota.
You know why you replace pipelines?
Because they break.
Because they're getting old.
Yeah, because
and if you don't, they end up doing more damage to the environment.
Yeah.
There's nothing controversial about it.
But climate change, Drew, and climate damage.
Right.
And signs and T-shirts and stuff.
Joining us now, Speaker Kurt Dowd. Good morning, sir.
This is an interesting one from the, at least from our perspective, because it's, there's an existing infrastructure in place. And correct me if I'm wrong, supporters of the project, oil shippers that use the pipeline, as well as the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and construction worker unions, members stand to gain several thousand jobs if the pipeline is built. But isn't there an existing infrastructure already there where the pipeline is being laid out, or am I wrong in that?
Well, it is. I mean, this is a situation where we have a 50-year-old pipeline that's been in use, for that time. And you know, the Obama administration ordered that this pipeline be replaced. So this isn't, kind of out of the mainstream. This is as easy a decision as could be made, but yet the Dayton administration still seems bent on blocking this pipeline from happening. And, of course, you know, they think they're going to stop oil from coming out of the ground. If they don't replace this pipeline with something more modern, Enbridge is going to continue to use this aging pipeline. And I think, frankly, this is an easy one. The safest, most efficient, most environmentally friendly thing to do here is to replace this pipeline. And the great news is that's also what's best for jobs in our economy.
Right.
So this should be a win-win for everybody.
Now, is there any chance you can get former President Barack Obama to come and speak at one of these hearings?
I don't know. But it is interesting. I mean, you would think that in the era when Barack Obama and his administration was blocking the Keystone pipeline, that if they didn't want pipelines, they would have blocked this one as well. But they're the ones who ordered that this one be replaced. That's how, you know, kind of mainstream and common sense that this replacement is. But, you know, I've heard recently, too, that the interesting thing is it used to be that it cost, you know, $100 a barrel to get a barrel of oil out of the ground in North Dakota. Now they're down to $40, and I've heard that they're headed to $25 a barrel. That literally means that this country will be, self-sufficient on its own oil production, which, you know, frankly, changes the way we think about foreign policy around the world. And it couldn't be better for our country or our economy. And apparently, you know, that makes liberal Democrats very angry because they're trying to do everything they can to stop that from happening. And I just, you know, again, that never ceases to shock me.
Now, you said that this pipeline was ordered by the Obama administration to be replaced, yet the State Commerce Department has apparently just sort of arbitrarily and on their own decided, nah, this new line isn't needed.
Can you talk
about the grounds on which they made that decision and if they have even bothered to propose any alternatives?
Well, they haven't. And you know, what they're saying is this line, you know, basically what the process that needed to happen is they weighed in on recommending whether the certificate of need got issued or not. And they're recommending that this certificate of need does not get issued, which means that this pipeline is not needed. And frankly, they're saying because of the fact that Americans and Minnesotans are using less oil, oil consumption is projected to go down, which I don't know that it actually is, but that's what they're saying, that in the future we won't need this line. I'm sorry, this one is just not even a thinly veiled effort to try to block fossil fuels from coming out of the ground. This one just doesn't make any sense on their part. And the worst part was after the Commerce Department issued that statement, the Governor Dayton put out a really tone-deaf statement saying, you know, that he's acting independently, that the Commerce Department isn't speaking for him, and that he'll weigh in after the Public Utilities Commission makes their decision. I'm sorry, the Commerce Department is him. That is the executive branch. That was his opportunity to weigh in, and he did. And it's interesting to see, you know, after his executive branch tries to block this pipeline, then he says, oh, that's not me. And I just hope the people in Minnesota aren't stupid enough to believe that sort of thing.
I hope so, too, but they did elect Governor Dayton twice, so...
Well, that's... Herein lies the problem, right?
Why does the Commerce Department get to make that decision, that this line isn't needed? Even if they're right, that the consumption of fossil fuels is going to decline, and there's plenty of reason to believe that it will, you know, Enbridge is the one that's ponying up the money to build this new pipeline. They've clearly made the determination that this pipeline is needed. If it wasn't, I'm sure Enbridge would rather not spend the money to build a new pipeline. You know, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to just go with the existing one if they really felt it wasn't needed. Why does the Commerce Department think that they know more about how to transfer oil and how to transport fossil fuels than the company that's actually got skin in the game?
Well, the Commerce Department doesn't get to make the decision. The Public Utilities Commission will ultimately make the decision. What the Commerce Department did was they weighed in. So that was Governor Dayton's opportunity to officially weigh in the process. Now, the Public Utilities Commission is supposed to be at arm's length and not be influenced by the governor, even though he appoints the Public Utilities Commissioners. So Commerce Department decided to make a recommendation to the Public Utilities Commission that this line was not needed. Now, the interesting thing is here, this is a private investment, and to put that into perspective, what we're talking about here is more than a $2 billion investment. This is like building two Viking stadiums. And remember that Democrats thought the Viking stadium was such a great economic benefit that they paid for half of it. And here we've got a private investment of $2 billion, and Democrats are trying to block that. So think of the jobs that that would create just in the construction, not to mention the property tax revenue that is created, because in many of the localities, Enbridge is the largest property tax payer in many of the counties these lines cross. In the case of Sandpiper, it would have increased the property tax revenue that came into to Crow Wing County by about 20%. I mean, these are huge numbers. And after all, this is the safest way to transport oil.
Right.
So it's the best for the environment and it's the best for the economy.
Talking with Speaker Kurt Dowd about the Enbridge Line 3 replacement project, it looks like the majority of the opposition is focused on things like, well, you know, oil's a fuel of the past. We should go with renewables and cheaper and cleaner fuels. And then on top of that, then you have sort of the scare tactics of, you know, the alliance in support of this representing large corporate interests. Where do you think things are leaning at the moment with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission deciding Line 3 fate next spring? Do you have any gauge whatsoever? I mean, obviously you're here talking about it, so there is a level of concern, but I'm curious how much the opposition is actually reaching individuals on this issue.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not exactly sure. I'm going to head up to Grand Rapids today and testify at the Public Utilities Commission hearing in Grand Rapids, and just kind of weigh in myself. But I encourage people to get involved and do that. I mean, this is a situation where the environmental groups get their people fired up, and they get them to show up and testify at these things. I'm a little nervous that the governor appointed the majority of the Public Utilities Commissioners, and he frankly puts in like-minded people. This should be an absolute no-brainer decision. If they don't approve this line, and I think what the environmentalists believe is going to happen and what the Dayton administration believes is going to happen is if they don't approve this, they'll just stop transporting oil and pipelines across the state. Well, that's not true. They're going to continue to use the old aging line that's 50 years old, and frankly, I think anybody is smart enough to say it's safer if we build a new line with all the new modern technology if you're worried about any kind of spill or leakage from the line.
That's the real danger.
The no-brainer.
Yeah.
Well, we got you, Speaker Dowd. We got a story from the Star Tribune here. Legislators are tightening their spending as the rift with Dayton continues. The Supreme Court is really kind of dragging this decision out, asking both of the chambers of the legislature to submit every possible dollar that they could tap into if this line item veto of your appropriations is held up. Talk a little bit about the rationing that you're having to do as members of the legislature, because I think one of the unintended side effects, or maybe it was intended, I don't know, because Governor Dayton is erratic, is the fact that the legislature, it's not just about, you know, the staffing and the employment and all the jobs and all the people that work there, but going out there and promoting your agenda and going out there and meeting with constituents and holding the town halls and the events and things like that. A lot of those travel expenses are covered in Senate and House appropriations, and now you're really having to cut back on that, which limits your ability as legislators to get out there and meet with your constituents.
Right. And, you know, I guess we hope that members will kind of do those things anyway. And what we've done is, I sent a memo out earlier this week saying that we were going to put in place some spending restrictions, meaning no per diem or mileage reimbursement for members, no committee spending, things like that. And basically that's because we're going to have to live now, starting October 1st, off of our reserves. We don't have an appropriation. The court put a stay on the lower court's decision. So we have to try to stretch things out as much as we can to get through next session. I think this governor use this kind of ill-advised tactic to try to hold us hostage to get us to, you know, renegotiate or change things that he had previously agreed to and then signed into law. I'm sorry, but as the Speaker of the House, I can't let that kind of tactic work, regardless of whether, you know, I agreed with him or not. It just, there is a process for how the legislature and the executive branch are supposed to interact. And if he didn't like bills that we sent him, he should have vetoed those bills.
Exactly.
Not signed, you know, agreed to them, signed them into law, and then tried to renegotiate. And that in itself, in a nutshell, is exactly what has been so frustrating about working with this governor. He can look you in the eye, give you his word, agree to something, sign it into law, and then decide he's going to change his mind, and then go out to the public and talk about how he's right and you're wrong. It literally is just baffling how he thinks, you know, he can get away with that. And you know, in many cases, the media kind of lets him get away with it. So, you know, that's a challenge that we have as well.
With the Supreme Court asking for all of the finances that you can possibly tap into, are you getting the sense that they may just sort of punt on this and say, you know what, if you can stretch out your existing dollars to get into the next session, then do that, get in the next session, and then you guys work it out?
Well, I think that's what they're doing. Now, their last order was fairly clear, not the last one, the first one that they issued. Was fairly clear, the one that ordered us into mediation. What they said is that the governor does have a right to line item veto a funding item. We never disagreed with that. It's how he's using this line item veto that we have a problem with, and the court should have a problem with too. But then they went on to say that you can't use a constitutional right for unconstitutional means,
yeah,
and that people are entitled to three functioning branches of government. So at what point do we become a non-functioning branch of government? At what point are the public kind of deprived of their legislators? And frankly, maybe it is when we stop paying mileage, and that means that members of the legislature stop going to town hall meetings because they don't get paid to do it.
Right, they can't afford to do it.
That won't happen necessarily, but I would say that members, if they're going to go to those meetings, are entitled to get reimbursed for mileage to get there. So. That's kind of the question right now.
No, we will certainly stay on top of it. Speaker Dowd, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon.
Coming up, Voice of the Vikings. Paul Allen will join us. Vikings made great escape, survived 20-17 against the Bears. And we'll get into the psychic who gave a crystal ball to Zimmer. She has Vikings predictions coming up on Twin Cities News Talk. Justice.